the high wave, that 5 foot wave, and some rain in San Diego. Well, they, you know, from what I see, it's getting 100% review. A couple of things when they want to look into. They have these latching, I call them relays, like circuit breakers. 17 different times they clicked out on a bus. They have many different buses. I think there's 8 buses, bus systems on the Orion spacecraft. So if one fails, they have another one for a backup, another one. So I think they'll look into why those relay-like or circuit break-like gadgets were opening up. And then they would close back again. You know, any high current, they would open. But they consider that a minor problem. So that's the story on the SES Orion. Earlier this year, of course, actually the very end of last year, James Webb Space Telescope was launched on Christmas. A year from this Christmas. Next week, and it took many months, or 5 or 6 months, to commission it, to realign everything, to have the shades open up to protect it. The thing is as big as a tennis court. The diameter of the mirror, the infrared mirror, is a little over 21 feet. That had to be assembled in space, all robotically. And turned out that eventually that went 100%. There were some glitches in the way, but they got through that. And they say the pictures are deep what they thought. There's one guy giving a report saying that that they expected to be able to go, you know, a certain amount of billions of miles away, you know, to be able to pick up pictures from these early stars, and now they can increase that because the scope is working better than they thought. Supposed to be a 5-year mission. They put enough fuel on there for 10 years. Well, maybe we'll get lucky. They got lucky. The Ariane 5 that launched it from French Guiana in South America, Kourou. The Ariane 5 was so accurate that spacecraft didn't use very much fuel. They didn't need to use much fuel going from Earth to the 1 million miles away, called the L2, Lagrange Point 2. Very little fuel, so they were able to save that. And instead of a 10-year supply, they now have a 20-year supply. So it's possible, I mean, theoretically possible, if this mission could go from a 5-year mission to a 10 or even 20-year mission. Okay, and this is WS2N. Just wanted to also talk about perseverance. There was a couple of other things that we did during this year. Of course, we keep sending people to the space station on a regular basis. We had the DART program, which slammed a big couple thousand pound weight into an asteroid and maneuver it to a different location. NASA's still working on the Quest supersonic plane that they plan on eventually flying over land, and seeing if they could do that with little or no sonic boom. And that thing's coming along. I think that's going to be tested next year. It's doing very well. But I wanted to talk about the Perseverance rover, which has been on Mars. Second nuclear-powered rover that we have on Mars. They are both presently operating. This one's doing good to the point where they're getting to the point where they when they're going to start leaving these little tubes. Perseverance drilled into rocks in different locations for the last year. And they're collecting samples. And they can collect up to like 38 of these samples if they want. But they've got a bunch of them collected already. And they're going to start dropping them off. Right now, after they drill them, the big robotic arm puts it into the belly of the vehicle, and it's riding around with all these samples. Now they're getting to the point where, okay, we're going to leave them on the surface in different locations, and they need big areas. They need like 20-foot flat areas. And if they find that, they're going to drop the sample there. Then they'll drive a good distance away, look for another 20-foot circle, diameter circle, do the same thing over and over again. This way, when eventually you have a sample return mission land on Mars, in the belly of the vehicle, you're still going to have duplicates of the things that is deposited on Mars. And the idea is to bring Perseverance over to that rocket that eventually will land on Mars, the sample return vehicle, put the samples inside of that, and the thing would take off. But suppose Perseverance does not have the capability years from now of doing that. It might break. Nuclear power might fail for some reason. Batteries might fail. Might fall off a cliff. Who knows? Might get stuck in the sand. And now they have all these samples that they collected all these years. And how do they get them back? Well, the sample return mission that they're going to be flying back to Mars not only has a rocket on board that will take these samples back to orbit, Mars orbit, and eventually back to Earth. On this sample return mission, they have two helicopters, similar to, but bigger than Ingenuity, the one that's been flying around on Mars now. That one that's been flying around on Mars now, Ingenuity, is so successful. It was supposed to be no more than five missions. They were hoping to get five missions, five flights out of this thing. They're now up to, I just read, they're up to 33 flights, successful flights, and it's still going. So, you know, every time the rover moves, eventually the thing flies ahead and scouts ahead and doing good work. Since that helicopter works so well, they're going to send two next time. And one of the purposes that they're going to do with these things is they'll fly, in case they can't bring the rover Perseverance back to the landing area, they could take a helicopter, fly over to one of these areas, pick up the tube, and then bring that tube in. The helicopter will put it into the return vehicle. And that's why every time they leave the sample, they're going to need this 20-foot diameter area. Helicopter's only going to be designed to do one little sample at a time, so you can't take the rover and just dump, you know, 20 samples down in one spot and have this rover fly over and pick up one at a time that way. It'll blow dust all over the place. They need separate landing locations. So I thought that was pretty good. The other main story, I know it's getting late, is the problems with the Soyuz spacecraft. Soyuz that's attached to it now, which brought up two Russians and one American, Frank. Rubio. I don't know. Anyway, these three guys went up about a month or so ago, and they've been doing their science or whatever it is that they're doing in the International Space Station, along with four other people that Dragon brought up a while back. There were seven people on board. The crew, two Russians, two of the Russians were going to do an EVA on the Russian segment. they were going to do some work outside. They're getting their suits on, and then somebody noticed that there was stuff coming out of some kind of debris coming out of the Soyuz spacecraft, the crew Soyuz spacecraft, the one that they took up and is presently docked to the International Space Station, sitting there for a month or so, and all of a sudden the stuff is flying out. They have video of it, and it lasted quite a few hours. They believe it's the coolant tank apparently is ruptured, or the radiator that's hooked to the coolant tank may be ruptured. They're not really sure. There's a possibility that it was hit with maybe debris. One of the Russian scientists think that maybe it was from the Gemini, meteor shower that we had recently. Anyway, they're going to try to figure this out. They used the Russian robotic arm to look to see what the problem is. Not accurate enough. The pictures aren't good enough. Now NASA's going to send over the Canadian robot arm, which is permanently attached to the space station as well. It has a very good camera on board to see very fine details. And now they're going to investigate that and find out what the problem is. But right now, I mean, you need that spacecraft as a lifeboat. The flight rules on the International Space Station are as many people that are on the space station, in case that space station has a fire and you have to abandon the ship, you need enough seats. Right now you normally would have seven. Now you don't have three. Three are now missing because they cannot use that spacecraft. So now they have to decide on what they're going to do. Russians are already thinking about sending another one up. With the space station, pull one of the Progress cargo vehicles out of one of the ports and dock another crew vehicle can go up autonomously. Russians have that capability. You don't even need a crew, but if that's an option, you might do that. And then, of course, the other option is somehow trying to fix this radiator leak or tank leak, or they're not sure exactly what it is. And then if that could be fixed, then they would be able to ride home on that spacecraft. Anyway, that's going to be interesting. We'll follow that week to week and see how they do and what kind of solutions are going to come up with this. Right now, they have a problem. Any comments, questions? Thanks, it's quarter after. This is WSON, name is Paul. Okay, that was enough time to zip through things. We have a lot of topics to go through. This lunar landers is one on the way now. Another moon that landed up at launch. Talk about that a couple of weeks from now. That's going to land like actually a couple of months from now. So we have time to discuss all these things. I know Wesley wanted to talk about the SWOT. We run out of time for that. We could discuss that as well. I think Roy pretty much covered it. The idea of it is to look at all the different oceans and rivers that are there and may not be there in the future. And this thing will tell you whether or not it could be disappearing. So, highly accurate thing. It's got the 2 Ka band aperture radar system on board, separated by about 33 feet. And it's going to give us a lot of detail. And the scientists and the ecologists and people that want to know about potential floods in an area will be getting information from the SWOT, which, by the way, stands for Surface Water and Ocean Topography Mission. Any comments? If not, we're going to pass it back to you, Roy. we'll try to make the nuts fall night, club nuts, on this repeater. AC2GS, WS2N, this is been the space nut report for the tech nut.
Okay, very good, Paul. Thank you for the space nut report again. I'm sorry that I delayed it. Thank you for all that you do here on the technical net. Thank you for all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. Just want to tie up a couple of loose strings. We talked about a device called a Hullerum. Hullerum is basically a small cavity with perforations in it. A different type of design was used for the fusion bomb. What it was used for in the fusion bomb was to focus the thermal energy from the fission and apply it to the fusion material and cause it to explode. In a similar way, what the Hullerum does in the inertial confinement fusion experiment is the lasers and everything heats up the cavity. The cavity acts as a black body radiator, and it's at high enough of a temperature where the primary peak amount of electromagnetic energy of the black body emission is X-ray, is higher than ultraviolet. So it's not quite an optical crystal. It's an optical cavity that acts as a black body radiator, for anyone keeping notes. Drop for a second. Well, with that in mind, it's 11:18. It's long past time to call it a night. I want to thank everyone who participated tonight. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you taught a few things. And I hope that you feel good about being here. And I hope that you come back in 2 weeks when we do it all over again. As I mentioned before, we're going to be taking next Sunday night off. December 25th is the Christmas Day, so obviously there will be people who don't hear this, and they'll come by Sunday night at 8 p.m., so if you're listening on the repeater, tell them, sorry, but no technical net on the 25th, but we'll be back on January 1st. I want to thank all the people that practice the old religion. Have a happy Chinooka. For those who follow the next religion up, have a very Merry Christmas. And for all of us, have a Happy New Year. I hope that 2023 is much better than 2022. Only time will tell. Again, be kind to each other. Be safe. Be smart about things. There's going to be a bit of problem with viral infection, so take the proper measures to limit your risk. And, you know, as I like to quote at the play, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open. And again, thanks everyone. Please come back in 2 weeks when we're going to try to do this all over again. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Gulf Sierra here, formally closing our Chinooka episode of the Technical Net. And I am clear.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you for the beta test.
And I have a comment for you about Ezekiel 6.
Okay, you doubled with Lou, by the way.
All right, let me see it. See on the screen I have it. And Roy, yeah, you can hear that we can do much now. That was impossible in the past. He would have taken me out completely. So I consider it a feature because at least you recognize it now. And if someone's trying to get in desperately, even from Echolink, now they have a clear shot. Anyway, thanks for the beta test. And it was did a couple tweets here, and I think we're good to go. So. Happy holidays, NY2H.
Thank you, Lou. Happy holidays to you. Thanks for all that you do for the repeater. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. There's a couple of extra little beeps and boops that seem to be going on. Hopefully those will be tamed as time goes on, but it ended much easier than it began, so I thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Allow me. Okay, you doubled again with Lou, by the way.
Yeah, but I dropped off because I saw him come on the screen. The comment about the beeps. The beeps, for the most part, are the same. The only difference is when we go across Belden and someone else, or vice versa, you'll hear the All-Star beep following the standard repeater beep. And that was a compromise I had to make to get everything else to work. Right now on Echolink, they can hear the particular repeater courtesy tone, so they can distinguish where the person's coming from while listening on Echolink, a new feature also that you couldn't do before. The thing you have to remember is that if you hear a repeater beep, that takes precedence. Ignore the All-Star beep. If you hear the All-Star beep alone, that means they're coming in either on an external All-Star note or on an Echolink note. So it's fairly easy to get used to it. But that was a small compromise to get everything to kind of play together.
Okay, understood. I mean, the only thing that I kind of wish we had the way it was once upon a time is the if you go into Echolink, the people using the Echolink, because it's rooted through the All-Star, it defines people as their nodes rather than as their call sign. And so in the past, there were people who would recognize me from the call sign, and I'd get messages on the text box. Ever since we switched over to the links, and I know you can look up links, but people generally tend not to look up the link node numbers.
Yeah, whoever wrote the fork for Echolink software on All-Star did not include that. I don't know if they, it should be fairly easy to do. They probably have to interface with the Echolink Network database. That's the drawback. And the only other thing we could do to resolve that would be to have an additional port with a traditional Echolink on it. But right now we're out of ports. Maybe in the future they'll do an upgrade on that software. I'm sure more people are interested in that. But, we'll see.
Okay, very good, Lou. As always, I appreciate all of your hard work in this. It's a thankless task. Wesley, you want to say something about lithium before we kind of call it a night? It gets kind of late.
Yeah, I was under the impression of the comment. All disorganized talk. You were talking about lithium when I came back to repeat it. So I'm going to start from the beginning. So tritium is a radioactive isotope of hydrogen, which has two neutrons, which makes it unstable and thus radioactive. And it was discovered in 1934 by Ernst Rutherford, Mark Oliphant, right, and Paul Hertnick, who have bombarded the deuterium with high energy neutrons, which resulted in the creation of tritium. So we have a deuterium, and then as a result we have a tritium. Now in that experiment they used tritium and deuterium together. But what about lithium-6? Today, tritium is most often produced in the nuclear reactors by neutron activation of lithium-6. So as a result, lithium turns into the helium and tritium, which is not radioactive. So we have no waste. We have no problem. We can reverse it again. And I've noticed that if radium 226 was replaced with that which you have on your wrist, dial of your watch, or any kind of fluorescent watches, gas lights, emergency exits, whatsoever, means the danger that you're talking about doesn't exist, because it's officially being done and it's allowed to be, and you have it close to your skin. So I would love to hear your comment about it.
Again, I think we're kicking a dead horse repeatedly at this point at 11:27 at night on a Sunday. It's radioactive. It's not as radioactive as a lot of other more radioactive. It's radioactive. It's not alpha emitters. It's not gamma. Well, some gamma. It's beta. Can you theoretically poison someone with it and cause a lot of problems? Yes, you can. You have to try to do something to do that? Yes, you can. So it's dangerous, but it's a lot less dangerous. It's a quibble with it, whether it's 1.7% is dangerous or 0.325 is dangerous, I think is splitting hairs at this point, and at this time of the night.
Again, I agree with you. Gasoline is dangerous, too. Nobody thinks about swallowing it. And to Xion, thank you very much.
Well, in the past, when I saw people lighting up their cigarettes while they were filling up their gas at the tank, I kind of made comments then. So I'm wary of many things. As a retired chemist, I worked with a lot of really incredibly dangerous chemicals that could give people liver failure and all kinds of nasty things. If just respect it. So I try to respect things.
Oh, definitely, you're right. By the way, you were talking about the battery. When I came back, you were talking about battery and lithium. Now, lithium can be also used for a nuclear battery, generating electricity by converting energy to the beta from beta radiation. So many scientists assert that this is technology of the future for deep space exploration, where the sunlight is too weak to generate enough electricity to power spacecraft. And the only way they think about using those batteries not in the car or not for electronic devices on the Earth is because of the word radiation. But that radiation is like nothing. Think about bananas that you eat. This has a little bit more. Enter it here.
Well, you know, the public fear of the unknown is a big problem. That kind of goes back to other conversations that you and John May, rest in peace, used to have about the American education system and or lack of. People get afraid of things they shouldn't. People are not afraid of things that they should. People are misinformed. Some people are ignorant. Some people are complete lunatics. It's, you know, part of the great equation of humanity, but hopefully we will survive it all eventually.
And last question do I have, because you love puzzles. How is it possible that you have a dial of your watch with tritium and it glows? How is it possible? Do you know the technique?
I believe that the radioactive decay activates a fluorescent dye, and the fluorescent dye absorbs the energy and emits it as a slow leak of that ghostly greenish-yellow color that we all know and love.
It is not exactly that. Tritium vial with a layer of phosphor from inside. So with the beta particles, and then you're covering it with the tritium. So you have a phosphor, and then you cover it with the tritium. With beta particles from the tritium, heat phosphor, they cause the fluorescence, releasing visible light. And it's absolutely beautiful. And that's how it works. Enjoy it, Jim.
Okay, no one's taking count, but that's exactly what I said.
Go ahead.
I don't have to go ahead. I don't want to describe it for the third time. The radioactive decay emits photons. The photons are not visible, but they can be absorbed by fluorescent material that absorbs photons and then re-emits them in a different frequency, more slowly, because it's sort of a semi-forbidden zone for transition of energy levels. So that's what phosphorescence is.
Yes, you're right. I didn't understand what you said. Yes, yes, and yes, you are right. But there is a catch. There is a catch. And the question for you is, how long that fluorescent sandwich is going to light? Give the light on your watch. Enter it here.
Yes, Jim.
Sorry about this.
Okay. Well, I take your apology. It's going to light until your ability to perceive phosphorescence from the amount of remaining beta decay is going on. If you're using your eye, it'll be imperceptible at one point. If you use a more sensitive device, it will emit light later on than that, because the intensity of your light of your eye is somewhat limited. You can build equipment that can detect a single photon coming out.
Yes. So the half-life of tritium is 12.32 years. So those markers will remain glowing for, say, over 10 years, depending on how much of tritium there is in them.
Yes, and all, it's a function of the amount of the radioactive material, the time, and the sensitivity of the detection device.
I do thank you very much. There was somebody else trying to make a comment.
Yes, that was Jim, VHD. Well, look, guys, it's been loads of fun. Well, I'm sure we could do this until about 4 o'clock in the morning. And again, going back to the days with Leslie and John, that's exactly what they did. I don't know how they did it, but 4 or 5 o'clock, they would be talking. And then around 5 o'clock, Dick, who was on the night before, would come back and discuss life and times with them. So these people never sleep, apparently.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Thank you very much.
Okay, once again, it's been fun. We got to do it again. I'm penciling in my calendar 2 weeks from today. So anyone out there still listening to this, thanks. And we'll be back. This is AC2GS once again attempting to go clear.
Yeah, the gentleman wants to talk to you, so Dr. Roy, thank you very much. Have a good night. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays. And Baruch Hashem.
Thank you. You too. Have a happy and a healthy new year. You and your wife.
Okay, the gentleman, this is N2HCN.
Good evening, Wesley.
Good evening, VHD. How are you doing?
I'm good. Jim, it's Bayport. I hope I didn't seem rude. Try to contribute what I could to the net. Just
just wanted to make a nice gesture on your behalf. You obviously got a an immense background that I do not have, and I appreciate that. I have a background of a different sort, but I just wanted to make a polite gesture in your direction.
Thank you very much, no problem at all. What kind of experience, what fields do you represent, if you don't mind to tell me?
Mostly a guy that just doesn't hire people to do things and does all things mostly himself. I got my garage shop in my basement. I do things, but I have over 3-decade experience in the fire service with some leadership in that role. And the school of hard knocks and the school of reality is where I come from. I started in electronics when I was young, but I was really, part of the vernacular, I sucked at math, so I it didn't work out. So it's a nice hobby, but not a good career for me. But that's where I come from.
Nice to hear it. But I'm curious what kind of shop it is. Is it electronic shop or is it metal machinery, which I love. I love mechanics. But to you.
Pilot crap that does all of the above. The one thing that I have not had the skill and the knowledge of is welding, and both of my sons are bringing that to the table now. So we make some things with the steel and welding technology. That's new to me. I never developed that skill. But so working on cars and trucks and houses and boats and whatever happens to come along. No particular specialty.
Okay. Well, the mechanics was one of the things that I love very much. At one point, I had my own mechanical lab. I had lathes, mills, all kind of machinery, CNCs, two CNCs, and I was involved in underwater cutting metal. And any kind of stuff of that. Everything has its own time. As we getting older, I decided to sell everything, which actually happened that most of the time I never lost on anything. I sold it for more than I bought it. But that's another story. I was mostly buying from the auctions. And I couldn't believe for how little money you need to pay for it. And to achieve.
Your son seems to have caught that bug. He insists you only buy things from rich people who don't need it anymore. He does pretty good for himself, buying various things from, you know, furniture to ski.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I had a machine that had a wood on the table, and the work piece was underneath of the water, and it was a thin metal that was cutting the metal, and it was sort of water jet the system, but I was able to cut titanium, stainless steel, aluminum, copper, whatever material was conducting the electricity. So yes, that was a great experience. I love mechanics. But it's like my profession, it was rather my hobby. So you say mostly you were doing the car body repair, right?
Hello. No, actually, that's probably what I do the least of. Avoid that like the plague. This neighborhood is very tough on car bodies, and fixing them is almost a lost cause. No, it's tinkering and inventing things, making things. My old son, he's got a pretty good operation here, making fire pits with steel ring as the support and railroad spikes as the legs. And it's a fire pit that you can keep for your entire life. Basically bulletproof. So we're not fancy people, we're simple people, but not sophisticated, but we get things done.
Okay. Yeah, I do apologize. It's for misunderstanding. When I was prepared for the subject, usually I try to prepare myself before I come to the next TechNet. But all of a sudden I got a phone call from two friends of mine demanding from me to talk, and I was in the middle of the conversation. Now, the European way is immediately respond, which I forgot that this is United States. You just don't pick up the phone. And then I lost part of the conversation, and when I came back, they were talking about lithium. So lithium is created, related to tritium, but I didn't hear the part of the conversation. But yes, you're right. I was disorganizing the conversation. Back to you.
Understood. I'm curious. Did they have Boy Scout programs where you grew up? I'll qualify that statement with, I don't know if that program is quite what it was when I went through it as a child and as an adult, but are you familiar with the Boy Scout program?
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. It was different reality. Could I call it horribly sick reality? Possibly, yes. But the children were taught never ignore. So when you grew up, never ignore. So yes, life over there was disorganized, but never ignore. Now when you have a landsman or the people from the same region, they already have in their blood, you have to respond. There is no excuse. And I'm in the middle of something. So, yeah, sometimes I have a difficulty to adjust, but if you could tell me about the Boy Scout program here more, I would be glad to listen to it.
Well, it's an in-depth program. Ed could tell you a lot more about it than me. He's much more ingrained in it. I lived it as a youth, and then later on as an adult with my son. But they had an adage that's going to sound harsh, and I'm not trying to be rude. It's going to sound rude because it's a harsh statement. But it's an organization that used to be anyway, it's hard to face it. So the premise for this phrase was faith-based. But I'll just throw it at you. They taught the boys, you have two ears and one mouth. You should use them in that ratio. And for some people, they just blow that off. Like, yeah. Some people go, ooh, are you talking about me? And some people will be like, so what? But it's a very interesting concept that makes you think about what your input into a conversation is versus your reception, your duty cycle on the radio, your input into an interjection into a conversation. And I just thought it, I've always thought it was a profound statement, and I don't mean to kick you in any particular part of your anatomy, but something to consider. So I'm ready to take all comments back.
Oh yeah, I do. Thank you very much for that explanation. I didn't know what ground you are responding to at first. I was caught in the middle of surprise, and I probably made improper reaction. I reacted improperly, right. Now, with me is like, my father was teaching mathematics, physics, and chemistry, but I wasn't that smart. So he had actually three faculties, right. And he told me once, when you speak one language, in Slavic language, it's okay. When you learn two, it's okay too. But when you learn three, you will start to understand all 27 of them. But, he said, similar stories with physics, with everything else, and with understanding other people. So probably my deficiency is that I didn't have a chance to learn the beautiful structure of the human relations that is used in the United States of America, because it's an extremely gentleman way. So yes, I do apologize for this interaction.
I don't think you need to apologize. I just give you like the lay of the land. That can be helpful. Your enthusiasm gets the better of you. Happens to me all the time. So I recognize some, I think I recognize some of my characteristics in what your characteristics are. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I do. So I figured I'd share that.
Yeah, it's good if I go to the beginning. So, I was raised as a Jewish boy in the country of hate. It wasn't that the Polish were haters. No, they were not. They didn't even realize that they do respond with hate. They didn't know about it. Think about completely sick reality of communism. When you are afraid of your shadow, you're afraid that somebody can listen to you, can hear you. And when I was a little boy, old Polish guy, but it wasn't Polish, it was Russian. So Russian made brainwash to the Polish because they were terrorizing Polish. And they, it was like a Jewish making matzah from Polish children. And the children didn't understand that this is a joke. And the Jewish are dirty. So, few boys decided they're gonna put me into the pond of water and put the dirt on me, because as I'm Jewish, I'm supposed to be dirty. And I almost died from that. And then many years later, I came to Poland and they apologized and they said, hey, we were children, what do you want from us? We didn't understand. So there are some things that are still in me that doesn't allow me as gentlemen, as be as much of a gentleman the American way. And to see it.
I'll make a statement and then I'll break. I'll say this. You
you are entitled to that, what you just described. You are entitled to be that way and feel that way and then understand the world, at least partially, in that way. That's your right to understand your history personally that way. I respect that, and I'd like to go on, but I want to end with saying that I respect that, and I believe that. Over to you.
Right. Our dreams are supposed to come to the land of opportunity and freedom, United States of America. It was my dream. And my father told me, the money is not important, your happiness is important. You want to go to America? Go to America. This is your dream? Do it. And that's why I'm here. And I remember the first day I came to United States, and I went to the construction site. And I'm asking who is the guy from the left-hand side. He says, I'm a dentist. And I'm asking the guy from the right-hand side, who are you? He said, I'm a surgeon. And we start to laugh. And then surgeon became a surgeon. A dentist became wealthy construction guy. I was continuing, that's what I know the best, that's the best particle field, but also I open up my own business. So that's the story for the immigrants here. I remember there was a time in '70s, '80s and '90s when there was plenty of jokes about Polish, how stupid Polish are, how whatever, whatever, whatever. Here in '90s, the educated Polish started to come into this country, and they presented great opportunity to the employers to take advantage of it and make money on it, and many of them became a successful business people. But we never became fully Americans, which is a pity. We still have in blood that, okay, we have to respond, we cannot ignore, and that disorganizes not only us, but those who we are talking to. Back to you.
So would you, I don't want to use the word, the current word is identify, but would you consider yourself Polish origin American?
Yeah, Polish is in my blood. Polish is in my blood. I love this country. I'm not saying that Polish are bad. It was just that accident where the Polish kid didn't understand that. But everything was not the Polish fault. Everything was Russian fault. Russian were aggressors. Russian were killers. Russian were oppressors. Russian were terrorists. But I'm not saying that being Russian is like you are terrorists. No. Those peoples are also victims of the system. So everything that communist touches was turning into the trash. Yes, definitely I do. I do identify myself as a Polish Jew who became American. And to hear.
Well, I will tell you that as an Irish American, all of my grandparents came from Ireland and had different stories, but they had their own set of troubles there in a beautiful country. And they still come here from there, and you go back there, you go why? And there's some reasons. But I will tell you that in my studies of the world, Poland of today is what much of the world should ascribe to, should try to be. They have overcome unimaginable, undescribable peril and are coming out of it stronger than ever. I'm quite amazed by that country.
Yes, I agree with you. So when finally in 1981, one single man named Lech Walesa, who was an electrician, but he wasn't educated as an electrician, he became just an electrician with only high school, made the collapse of Soviet Union and communism regime in the world. One man, it took him 2 weeks to activate at first 300,000 and then 30 million Polish. And then solidarity that was created by him sent their guys to everywhere, to East Germany, to Czechoslovakia, to Hungary, and the rest of the Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and that would make the collapse. I'm amazed of how the Poland is right now. It's a cookie. It's a sweet, beautiful cookie. And my wife came from Poland. She's 24 years younger than me, little job. She came in here and she said, "What? You just took me to this trash? Look how Poland looks like. Every smallest possible road has a pavement in the deepest village. There are no houses yet, and you can drive through the agriculture region 10 miles, and you see that you already have driveways to not existing houses. And those drivers are with the pavement with the red brick looking nice, waiting for somebody to buy that and build their own house. And the lots are 5, 6, 7 times bigger than in United than in New York, area New York, in heavy areas. So the cities become very big because of that. Because this is the law. So yes, Polish made extremely, absolutely amazing progress. And in 2017, Poland was the quickest growing country in the world. And to
Where's the other I'd like to respond, but we're going to give a break to see if anybody else wants to get in. We'll continue. Katie, WBHD, Jim, Bayport. Is there anybody else who wants to interject or an emergency? You have the frequency. That's 2 years, 1 mouth thing. It has nothing to do with the validity of what we're saying, but gotta give other people a shot. Any rebuttal to that concept, Wesley?
Yes, I am now.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yes, I am now. Yes, I agree. Yes, I start to understand the concept.
I'm trying to be as polite as I can. Sometimes it's a little, sometimes you gotta rattle the cage, you know. I enjoy your input into the conversation. It's very interesting. I see things in forums, things that I just don't have the skill set for. I hit my wall and I backed off. And you bled right through it. That's pretty cool. I'm impressed. but I've done other things that have their own merits. Together, we're stronger than we are individually.